Back together again, you and I, on Tuesday, February 27th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. I kicked off the show with my thoughts about what I think has to happen next after the four-round Bridgeport election fiasco. Columnist Chris Powell stopped by to touch on a bill that could curtail the rights of Connecticut landlords, while Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio stopped by with the latest from Hartford.
Yeah, election day number four. Let's remember something here. All right, will you do me a favor and think about this? If you're a Bridgeport voter, and even if you're in the surrounding area of anywhere in Connecticut, and if you're a Bridgeport voter, go out and vote six or seven times. I don't care. We're enough of this. All right. Oh my God, he said to vote six times. I'm kidding. It's hyperbole with a point, though, if you know what I mean. The only reason we're here on Tuesday, February 27, 2024, still voting in a Bridgeport election for the fourth time. Two primaries, two general elections, making the city, not the people of the city, not the good, fine people who live here and who work here and who want to make this their home. Not those people, but Bridgeport's a laughingstock right now, at least the electoral process. Again, not throwing shade at anybody who lives here or works here or you find Bridgeport callers, but we're here on a fourth round. Four. Who does this four times? But please take a moment to remember that the only reason we're here at round four is because somebody got caught. That somebody that got caught, I guess, is still suspended without with pay or whatever. Who, that's gone real quiet, right? Hasn't that gone quiet? The only reason we're here at round four is because somebody either didn't care about the security cameras or did care and said, well, come after me. This person allegedly is still being investigated for 2019. So again, go out and vote. I'm serious about it. Vote once. Don't vote two or three times. Try to limit it. I hope you limited the whole thing to one absentee ballot this time around. You shouldn't say that, Paul. Tell me why I shouldn't. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Go ahead and tell me why I shouldn't. So we're here today at round four. Who knows what sort of disciplinary action is going to be handed down to somebody, I guess, just from what I read in the media, was also under the microscope for 2019. That's not according to me. That's according to state officials. So don't call up and jump down my throat because of that. But here's the bigger issue. And whomever's going to win, pre-congrats to Joe Ganim or John Gomes or David Hurst, whomever, that I don't care. I don't live in Bridgeport. I don't care. But what I do care about is what's going to happen next. What is going to happen next? Now, the General Assembly is in session, and all we heard when we got done with round one, and then we learned about the funny business, and we went to round two, and we had more funny business, and then we went to round three, and everything. And look, we know where this has led. We don't have to go over, you know, months and months and months of this. Here's the bottom line. All we heard was, well, that's it. Oh, man, we've got to, now we've got to do something. Oh, boy, we got to do something. Now, what I want you folks to do out there, because Lord knows I'll be watching and I'll be telling you what's going on. I'll be scurrying all the news sites. I'll have my contacts at the Capitol watching. Let's see what the powers that be, and you know what? Maybe I'll be surprised. Maybe they will do something. But let's see what the Secretary of the State does, Stephanie Thomas. Let's see what the bigwigs in the state Senate do. And in the State House, Matt Ritter, Bob Duff, Marty Looney, all those folks, Gary Winfield. Let's see if they're serious about this, because I can almost guarantee you they're up at the Capitol right now saying, okay, let's get it done. Oh, fourth round. And tomorrow they'll say, any problems? No, no problems. Yes. Okay, now let's get this all get tougher thing. They're going to hope it goes away. They're going to hope it goes away. Now, remember, we're in the short session of the General Assembly because it's an election year, and they don't want to do too much in an election year because people like me who do talk shows and write columns and everything and actually cover the Capitol, we actually tell you who's doing the funny business here. It's the short session. So the session kicked off 3 weeks ago. Tomorrow will make 3 weeks. The session is running this year from February 7th to May 8th. So there's only 3 months to go now. Maybe I missed something, or maybe they'll act on this. That would be good to see. But we're already a month into the General Assembly session. Already. Have you seen, because I sure have, and I know stuff they voted down, have you seen any member of the General Assembly? And you pretty much have to say Democrats, because they control everything. I know the GOP is on this, but the Democrats control everything. So you tell me, have you seen anybody? Now, it's the Secretary of the State's job to be out in front on this. I get it. She's a constitutional officer. She's got very little power in this whole thing. So the notion that, well, Stephanie Thomas said that, and good for her. She's been on the radio station here, you know, with Melissa in the morning and on other day parts. That's fine. What's the General Assembly going to do to make sure that this absolute embarrassing mess on both campaigns doesn't happen again, and at least on one side, allegedly by somebody who allegedly, notice how I'm being careful here, was or still is under investigation for something 4 years ago. I will submit nothing will change. I'm telling you, I submit nothing will change. And now remember, the same people that won't do anything in Hartford, maybe they will, and they'll surprise me, and I'll say, you know what, bad on me, good on them. Maybe they were finally shamed into doing this. But I'll tell you something. These are the same people that are going to ask you this November to give them the keys to the car, to open up the hood on the state constitution and say, hey, let's have no excuse, unlimited vote-by-mail absentee ballots. I don't know about you. I'm a hard and steadfast no on that. You gotta be crazy. Unless they come out and show that they have the huevos or ejulioni to really do something to make sure this embarrassment in Bridgeport politics doesn't happen again. I don't know. You think they're serious about this? You tell me. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. This is embarrassing, but let's see what happens after today. Henry in Southport's with us. Henry, good afternoon. What's up?
Hey, Paul. I'll go out on a limb and say that the crime syndicate of the Ganim campaign will win the election, and it is a joke beyond a joke.
Yeah, look, he's probably going to win, but my bigger concern is, and Henry, I'm kind of kidding when I say I don't care, but I don't. I don't live in Bridgeport. I trust the people of Bridgeport to make a decision. But here's my question. What are we going to do, Henry? What's the leadership in Hartford going to do to make sure it doesn't happen again with this absentee ballot funny business? What happens?
They're not going to do anything because, like you said, they control it. And what's really amazing is that the Republican in this race is an empty suit, and they're just eating each other based on a bunch of Democrats. So they'll continue to break the law, and they'll continue to strong-arm people, and their slogan is, vote early, vote often, for Ganim.
Thanks, Henry. I appreciate it. And listen, as far as the Republican David Herz, look, I I feel sorry for any Republican who actually tries to run and win in Bridgeport, in Hartford, in New Haven, these big cities. I mean, they're so blue. Yeah, there's a section or two in Hartford, Bridgeport, and New Haven that, you know, may vote Republican, but it's over. It's over for the Republican Party in the blue city. Now, they may not win. They can chip away at some votes, which could help them on statewide races or in legislative races. But municipal races in the blue cities, it's over. It's and that doesn't mean that the Republicans are bad people or bad candidates. Demographics, kids. Boys and girls, demographics. Age, race, gender, socioethnicity, socioeconomics. It's over, and that's why it's tough to get a Republican in Bridgeport, Hartford, or New Haven to do this with a gusto, because in the end they know, I really got no shot here. Boz voted today. Boz, how are you? How many times did you vote, Steve?
Well, first we went down to the Gym of Capitorium. Now, today was interesting because the kids were playing basketball. Normally, the school is quiet, but they were playing basketball, in it, so that added a new dimension.
Yeah.
And so we went to the first station, and then we put on our Biden and Kamala Harris mask.
You and the wife?
We went to another, school, showed them my ID. They said, go right over here, Buzz.
Did they start playing Hail to the Chief when you walked in?
I thought that they probably thought it was Mr. Green Jeans coming in there.
Oh, boy, that's old.
You know what I'm saying?
Jesus.
They probably thought it was most of the people listening don't even know what Mr. Green Jeans are.
Thanks, Steve, for reminding us how old we are. Thanks. I love you.
Oh, yeah. Those were the days, though.
Yeah.
But anyway, we could have voted for Mr. Ed. That would have went over two with the Beaver.
But Steve,
so
seriously.
We grabbed many pieces. My wife grabbed about 15 pieces of paper right in front of Harriet.
God. I mean, Steve, is this going to change? I mean, I haven't heard anything from Hartford yet saying, hey, we can't let this happen again.
The only two Republican mayors I've lived here 39 years, was Mr. Lenny Paoletta, and then Mary Moran.
Mm-hmm.
And in my time in this city, those were the only two Republicans. You know, I have voted Republican in the past, but in this situation, I wanted to kind of block, so I kind of went a little different this
time.
Okay,
you don't have to tell us. No,
because, you know, they put it in the box in the cafeteriatorium and they ziplocked it, you know what I'm saying? But it's, you know, this poor town, it's always something. It's always something. But, you know, we'll see. But hopefully this runs smooth today. I thought what you brought up was so interesting was the part about the stuffing the ballot boxes, how that story just kind of like, I mean, that was on Fox News for a while, and the lady's name was, and all of a sudden, it's amazing how things can kind of disappear.
And Steve, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Listen, she's still liable. I mean, nobody knows what happened yet. She's innocent till proven guilty. I get it. I understand it. But she still has alleged problems from 2019. That's not coming from me. That's coming from state election officials. And, you know, they said that maybe there might be a criminal reference here. So who knows? But my question is, do you have any real faith that this is going to get any better? I mean, imagine if that video was not unearthed. If the Gomes campaign had never gotten a hand on that security video, can you imagine where we'd be or where we wouldn't be? And as usual, I urge you folks to go to, when you get a chance, go at least two or three times a week. He has new stuff up there. Go to ChrisPowellColumn.com, Chris Powell, P-O-W-E-L-L, Column.com, and you'll see Chris's columns there two or three times a week. He's written about the state and politics for many years, not afraid to talk about the things that you and I talk about a lot here on the show. Chris Powell joins us. Chris, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Great to be with you, Paul.
Chris, have you voted yet here in Bridgeport? Because, you know, we're it's only the fourth.
I don't think I'm going to be qualified to vote in Bridgeport until I'm dead, Paul.
And you voted three previous times the same day. Yes. Yes. You know, Chris, before we get into your stuff, and I open my show with this, you know, we're a month in, Chris, to the General Assembly, the short session this year. And I'm waiting, Chris. I don't know about you. I'm with rapt attention here, with bated breath, waiting for all these election reforms, Chris, that are supposed to come from the majority here to make sure that Bridgeport doesn't happen anymore. What are the odds? I mean, come on.
I wouldn't call them reforms, Paul. I'd call them, you know, ballot harvesting and illegal aliens voting, and I imagine those are the reforms in the minds of the Democrats.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll keep an eye on that, Chris. Your previous column and the one you have coming out, Chris. You like I was talking the other day here on the show about the sheer terror, how UConn is going to crumble into a pile of steel and concrete, a smoldering mass, if they don't get every cent they want.
Yeah, there was a hearing before the Legislature's Appropriations Committee last week where the college executives appeared and said UConn and the state colleges and university system need at least another $110 million more than Governor Lamont has proposed for them. This was pretty laughable insofar as the poverty was being pleaded by some spectacularly paid college executives. The president of UConn, Radenka Marek, who was pleading poverty, is getting annual pay of, if you count fringe benefits, more than $700,000. And the chancellor of the Connecticut State University system, who was also pleading poverty to the legislatures, he's getting salary and fringes of almost $500,000. And here they are telling the legislature that they can't save a cent in higher education. What really bothered me more than that self-serving business was the use by the colleges of some of their students to complain about the supposed poverty of the colleges and universities. You know, the students clearly have not been given any idea about the skepticism they should have in public life, and certainly they weren't aware of any of the scandals in higher education in Connecticut, and certainly not aware of the salaries of the college executives they were listening to there. They just were saying, oh, you've got to give the university and the colleges all this money, or they're going to cut services to us, which is true. That's what will happen if the salaries of the overpaid executives are cut. They'll take it out of the students. But I was just very disappointed in the students not seeing what was going on, not asking any questions like, you know, why does the UConn president have to make $700,000 a year and the chancellor of the colleges and university system have to make $500,000 a year? They're unaware of the Kevin Holley scandal, the scandal, the firing of the Manchester Community College president that ended up with a $750,000 damage settlement and the president's reinstatement, and no explanation given to the public as to what happened for this waste of money. But the interesting thing is the Governor Lamont, seems inclined to tell the higher educators that they're going to have to learn to economize a little bit.
Yeah.
The governor says, look, you got all this emergency federal money during the epidemic, and you knew it was going to be temporary, and you should have planned for it, but you didn't. I'll be very surprised if the governor doesn't capitulate to the higher educators in the end, but it's very interesting to watch so far.
And not to mention, Chris, and you and I know have talked about this before, and this is not to go against any of the great work that the doctors and researchers and nurses and all the practitioners do at the UConn Health Center, but my God, that place year in and year out, Chris, is an absolute black hole. It's a money pit. I mean, people don't realize how many millions in the hole the UConn Health Center puts the state.
Yeah, even the legislators now acknowledge that the big problem in making UConn Health solvent is the failure to get control of the salaries there. You may remember what was it, 2 or 3 years ago, a professor at UConn Health didn't show up for months and was kept on the payroll. It turned out he'd been murdered by his wife in their basement, and they just kept mailing the checks even though he never showed up at work. And I think that's pretty emblematic of management in higher education in Connecticut, public higher education.
Chris, speaking of emblematic, you're touching on your new column coming out, I think, tomorrow. Something I talked about on the show earlier this week. In fact, I had Rob Sampson, one of the Republican state senate members, about a very interesting exchange he had during a public hearing about a bill that could really put, Chris, law-abiding landlords in this state who own property, who pay taxes on it, who maybe find landlords behind the eight ball if they simply want to make a decision with a privately owned piece of property.
Yeah, this was a hearing before the legislature's housing committee last week. And, you know, we've got a desperate shortage of housing in Connecticut. The housing prices and rental prices are sky high, and people are really suffering. But what was the proposal before the housing committee last week? It wasn't anything about building any of the new housing we need. It was a proposal supported by the Connecticut Tenants Union that would require landlords to have some just cause before they evicted tenants, even at the end of their leases, would freeze or prohibit rents. Sampson is a landlord. Connecticut Mirror covered the hearing, and he asked the president of the Tenants Association, is there something wrong with a landlord making a profit? And the Connecticut Tenants Association president said yes, and was joined in her yes by the dozens of people who came out to the hearing to support the Tenants Association position. So this is not how we're going to get more housing in Connecticut if we tell people that if you invest in housing, rental housing construction, we're going to freeze your rents and prevent you from evicting anybody. But, the tenants here are going to turn out to be even greedier than the landlords. If they get their legislation through, they may keep their apartments longer, but they're going to prevent anybody else from getting apartments because no apartments will ever be built.
Absolutely. And finally, Chris, I know in the column tomorrow you're pointing out something that people are kind of starting to remember, that the current problem in Ukraine with Russia actually has its seeds or its origins about 10 years ago, if I remember correctly, during the Obama years. And that's even being reported now by some mainstream publications.
Yeah, people forget that the problem in Ukraine began with U.S. meddling. We helped the coup that overthrew an elected government in Ukraine, a Russia-friendly government in 2014. And the New York Times reported the other day that soon after we helped overthrow the Russian-friendly government in Ukraine, the CIA, our CIA, opened a dozen spy bases in Ukraine and started coming up with immensely valuable intelligence on Russian military and strategic installations. And that shortly before Putin had Russia invade Ukraine, after warning the West, don't put your North American treaty or North Atlantic Treaty Organization in Ukraine, Putin was warning against that. That was, his big objection was, the Western powers starting to take military intervention in Ukraine. Putin, according to the New York Times, had a meeting with one of the Russian spy agency chiefs who told him exactly how the United States was building a military spy bridgehead in Ukraine. And that was very much a trigger for the Russian invasion. When the Soviet Union fell in 1990, and the Russians withdrew from Eastern Europe, all sorts of Western officials assured Russia, look, if you just get out of your satellites in Eastern Europe, we will make sure and you let Germany reunite, East and West Germany reunite, we will make sure NATO doesn't move one inch eastward. You'll continue to have this buffer area in Eastern Europe, and, you know, everything will be fine before between the great powers. Well, of course, we broke that promise. We've moved NATO right up against the Russian border. And then we're wondering why Russia is so agitated. We've had the Monroe Doctrine protecting the Western Hemisphere against, foreign intervention since 1823. Mm-hmm. We have claimed the whole Western Hemisphere as a buffer against foreign powers, and we are begrudging Russia even this little bit of Eastern Europe as a buffer. We provoked this war in Ukraine, and it could go nuclear at any moment if somebody makes a mistake. I hope to God we have the sense to shut it down, make whatever peace that can be made, and restore a little bit of a buffer zone to Russia, just as we have over here. Look, when Russia started putting nuclear missiles in Cuba, mm-hmm. 90 miles off our shore in 1962, we imposed a military blockade on Cuba and almost went to war with Russia. How come we need a buffer, but we begrudge it to Russia?
Good question and a good thought. Chris Powell, thank you. Folks, again, go online, chrispowellcolumn.com. ChrisPowellColumn.com. Chris, thanks. You've got until 8 o'clock tonight to vote again in Bridgeport. So
I can't vote in Bridgeport. I'm a citizen.
You can't? You can't?
No, I'm a citizen.
Oh, geez. And on that note, Chris, thanks, and we'll talk next month. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Geez. All right, we'll get back to open phones and just a wee bit later in the hour at 333-9422-333. WICC every Tuesday at this time. We check in with Megan Portfolio, blogger, reporter, all that, researcher extraordinaire at the Yankee Institute. She writes the Hartford Portfolio blog. Please tell me you're not glued to CTN. Have you stopped watching CTN?
Oh, I'm going to have to. I'm so behind because I had to write an article today.
Yeah.
So I am going to have to watch it through. I don't even know when. It's like all sleep.
Do you like DVR this, or you go to the on-demand stuff there and you sit through these hearings?
Well, thank God for technology, yeah. And they put it on YouTube, so okay. It makes it super easy to fast forward through the boring parts.
Okay. All right. Through the boring parts.
Most people would consider the whole thing boring, but boring for nerds like me.
Well, at least we have that venue that we can watch this stuff. So Megan is here. Now, you may remember last week, I think we talked a little bit about this big, burgeoning omnibus environmental bill. You dubbed it the Green Monster. Now it's kind of called that, and a lot of people snibed back at you in the past couple of weeks for this. But we're finding out, are we not, Megan, a little bit more of what's in this bill. So fill us in.
Well, actually, a little bit of an update. I mean, word on the street is it's going to be changed yet again. I guess it's been going back and forth with changes.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I had a real problem with was, and so should all your listeners, is the 100% electrification of all new construction.
Okay.
Like this mandate would just, be statewide. So any new building, any new remodel would have to, 100% electrical. So no oil, no gas, no propane. I'm hearing that they're taking that out and it's only going to be applied to state project.
So
the monster is getting a little bit smaller, but it still has not been released.
Yeah.
So I'm going to lay off for a little bit because I don't have any more info on it.
Yeah.
Other than it's changed. And supposedly the goal is to have a public hearing on it on March 8th, but that's mm-hmm. not set in stone. So, obviously that can change, but I'm literally refreshing my bill tracking screen to see if the thing pop up, but mm-hmm. it hasn't popped up yet.
Yeah, and
so kind of some good news.
Yeah, and again, Megan, whether it's that, and obviously they say they're going to do it for state buildings now, pull it away. Where between that and the all electrification of autos at 2035 and beyond, where are we supposed to get all this electric power? I mean, it's fine if you have the power, use it. But we hear this stuff, Megan, and then, you know, on these oft hearings when they actually, geez, I don't know, ask the people from UI and Eversource about this, they say, you're out of your mind. We can't generate this much power.
I mean, what are they saying? Our electric bills are going to be going up like $40 this month?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's where they're going to get the money from. I mean, where is it supposed to come from? I mean, they keep saying that we're going to use the, you know, the COVID money. We're going to use the infrastructure money. I keep hearing this over and over again. It reminds me of a friend of mine who was on Weight Watchers.
Yeah.
And she kept opening up the refrigerator and eating. And we're like, Renee, you're not going to lose any weight because you keep eating. And she's like, I know, but it's only 1 point. But we're like, Renee, you've eaten 100 points already.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh.
Sorry, Renee.
Oh, man. No, but I know what you mean. If you have to set up parameters, is what you're saying. There's this, if we can do it within what's normal, then it will work, right? But we, you know, this reminds me of that engineer from Eversource that was in testifying on the car thing months ago, said, yeah, we would need like 7 new generating plants. Seriously? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that's just for automobiles. That did not figure in, you know, households. I mean, we generate, how much power do you generate in your household? I mean, I have CTN all day, so that's why my electric bill is so high.
I'm feeling really randy.
I put it on the big screen TV on my
Roku. Wow, surround sound, right? Dolby surround sound. You also made an allusion here, and whether or not this has changed, I don't know. You probably could let me know or not. But again, are they floating the notion of some sort of carbon tax or carbon levy here? Because every time we hear that and the carbon trade-offs, this was the big thing like 7 or 8, 9 years ago. Is it still around in this bill?
I don't know. It wasn't even a bill. I never actually saw the bill. I just saw a summary that had come from one of the reps.
Mm-hmm.
They were in full support of a federal carbon tax, and they were trying to float this scam. And whenever the government tells me they're going to give me money back, it always costs me money. So the theory is they're going to charge a tax at the point of entry of energy, like at the oil wells. So they're going to get a tax there, which obviously they're going to pass along the supply chain. But then with the money that the government generates from that, they'll, you know, reimburse ratepayers for the increase in cost of energy. But I'm like, this is the government telling me that. I mean, they tell me I'm supposed to get all my Social Security, but the outlook on that is probably not so good. So the federal government needs, you know, state support for it, not legislatively, but just to get the people on board with it. And so that was one of the provisions in their proposal in this Green Monster, that they want to give support to the feds to impose this national carbon tax.
Megan Portfolio was the guest from
the... I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer.
No, listen, people would rather know it now than have it jump up on them. And Megan, it's funny because I'm sure you remember, as I do, years ago, when, you know, people started turning against coal and oil, I get that. But I can remember not all that long ago when natural gas, oh, my God, the advertisements we would see about natural gas, it was billed as the clean energy. And it's amazing now how suddenly that's become verboten, too. Like, really?
Oh, yeah, back in the day, they were giving incentives out for people to convert over to natural gas, which I actually had in one of my apartments. That I absolutely loved. Shame on me, but I did love it for cooking.
Well, yeah, and that's what now they do say that a real chef doesn't use an electric stove, right?
Yeah, well, that's me usually every night yelling at my electric stove because it's not heating up fast enough or it's super inconsistent.
Yeah, and me with the single white suburban guy working that microwave. Yes. Anything else you're looking at down the pipe here in the next week or so to tickle our fancy?
Yeah, this so they call it the Green Amendment, and it sounds really nice and friendly. It's just guaranteeing each person shall have the right to clean air, water, and a healthy environment, which sounds really nice because everyone likes clean air and a healthy environment. But they did try this last year. So they want to make they want to add an amendment to the state constitution declaring this. But the language last year was so vague that it literally would have not only created all kinds of lawsuits against government entities, businesses, but they're not taking into account that you're putting out roadblocks against all of your environmental projects you want to do. For example, if I have across the street from me, I have a bunch of trees, you know, acreage of like a little forest, and they want to put a solar farm in there. Well, I like looking at my trees. I can use this. I can evoke this Green Amendment and basically sue and delay construction of this, increasing the cost of this solar farm, saying, hey, you're cutting down the trees and you're creating an unhealthy environment for me. I'm not saying I'm going to win in court. However, it's going to go to court and it's going to cost people money and it's going to cost businesses money and it could cost municipalities money. This is essentially an unfunded mandate, and we know our municipalities don't like those.
Yeah, and what happens on this, Megan, and you've seen this too, when we get these rights to this, or this is an emergency or that's an emergency, essentially that is, you know, they use certain language, all legislative bodies do, who want to get something through, to eliminate either A, the regular legislative process, or B, tie it up in the courts. So, well, can you imagine if this is in the state constitution? Oh, my God. The state Supreme Court, the legislature, billable hours by the attorneys. I can imagine what a mess that would be.
And we're basically defining, like, none of these terms of like healthy environment, like none of these terms are defined. So now we're going to leave that up to the courts to do, which is basically giving the courts the ability to legislate, which I'm not that down or cool with that. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's lazy lawmaking. Like if we're having issues with the water or whatnot, like pass a law, make a regulation. I mean, obviously we shouldn't have polluted water, but we have laws and regulations on the books to stop all of that. I mean, if there's a hole or a loophole somewhere, close it up. But creating this amendment is it's not a good idea. It's just not a good idea, plain and simple. I mean, NIMBYs will like it because, hey, they want to build this 400-unit apartment complex down the street from me. I don't want it there. It's going to, you know, ruin my property value. Hey, this construction is going to lead to an unhealthy environment. I'm going to sue.
Yeah.
Now I thought we had a housing crisis. Well, now you're delaying all these projects. And actually, in New York, they've done this. I haven't looked at the case in a while. I don't think the judge ruled in favor of them, but there was a bunch of NIMBYs that were trying to prevent development in the city to stop this huge infrastructure they wanted to build of housing and commercial, and they tried to stop it, saying that it was harming their environment, it was making it an unhealthy environment, and they used it to sue. So I mean, it's nice that they want to do these things, but it's like some of these environmentalists, they just look at it through one lens and they're laser focused on just the environment, and they're not looking at the big picture and the consequences that some of these things will do is actually going to be more harmful than helpful.
Absolutely. Listen, we've talked long enough. I don't want to deprive you from...
No, man, I wanted to talk more about the Green Amendment.
I don't want to keep, because I can hear you're twitching. You're too far away from CTN. So I'll let you... I kid. CTN is a wonderful, wonderful aspect of what's on your cable or your satellite, and you should watch it. As does Megan Portfolio. The blog is called The Hartford Portfolio. She keeps an eye on stuff that's going on in Hartford that could affect you. Megan, thanks. Have a wonderful week, and we'll chat next week.
All right. Bye, Paul.
All right. Take care.